I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, and welcome back to the Keith Cheggers podcast. My name's Hannah Norris. I am your host here, and I am also here with my husband,
Carl Donnelly.
Yes. Yes, we are still married. He is still here with me for these episodes.
I'm still saying my name in that tone of voice every episode.
Carl Donnelly.
Yeah.
It's going to be very good at saying
I know. Sound like a sort of...
It's about 80s kind of...
Well, regional BBC, like Hartfordshire DJ.
Yeah,
that's
what I'm going hear that. For.
It's good. You've got to promote yourself and, you know, find your USP
For the job you'd want. And that my job I want is regional radio.
Yeah.
It's my dream
it sounds
job.
Like it's a quite comfortable, cushy lifestyle, isn't it?
I'd love it. Talking about A roads.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Yes. It is. You're pretty good at that as well, aren't you? Yeah. And as you can hear, we are also here with our fabulous guest who has a great voice. She's an actor, and you would have seen her on TV shows like Catastrophe, the brilliant Catastrophe. And she's just finished The Three Sisters at the National Theatre, which was also brilliant.
Yes.
And her name is Sarah Niles.
Hello.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you for having me.
How many podcasts have you been on in your life?
I think one.
Yeah.
Done a few radio things.
Yeah.
For Soho Radio, but I've just done this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a bit of a cold, so my voice is extra...
Husky.
Yeah.
What kind of job are you going for with it?
I have no idea. Probably wouldn't last long. Chocolate, probably.
Yeah.
Selling chocolate.
Yeah, that's a good one. Which this podcast is about pregnancy, because that is what's happening in my life, in mine and Carl's life, in my body right now. I'm currently at week 23 of my pregnancy. So I hit 5 months last week. And I started talking to people in terms of months, and I'd forgotten what week I was at. So I remember now, and it's week 23. And the guests we have on with us are pregnant or have been pregnant, and Sarah is in the has been pregnant category.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And has a daughter. How old is she?
She's 7, going to be 8 next month.
Yeah, that was about what I thought.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen her for a couple of years.
No, she still remembers you though. Oh, when I tell her about the post-it notes, she remembers. She's like, do you remember Hannah? The post-it notes. She goes, yes.
I let them stick things all over my face.
Yeah, you're good with kids. Kids do. You are good. Remember you because you always end up playing fun games with them that a lot of adults don't play with them.
Yeah, I don't feel like I've ever been particularly drawn to children. Like I'm not like I can't wait to be at that thing where the children are.
Yeah,
but. I think, there's something that I like to play stupid games with them.
Yes.
There's this thing, my friend's kids, twins, they used to call me Butterfly Hannah. And when they had birthday parties, they'd invite me along with their kids' friends.
Yeah.
Didn't, because they couldn't quite work out if I was a grown-up or a child.
Well, and that's what I mean. I think when you're around kids, you don't act like an adult playing with his kid.
Yeah.
I think you very much meet them at their own level.
which
that sounds like an insult, but it's not. I mean,
no,
it's a nice thing.
Just come straight in on that level. But,
and they can smell a rat. They know.
Absolutely.
They know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
But seeing Nyla the other day, I loved meeting her again the other day because she had that thing of a young girl with a self-assurance and a confidence and ready to have a conversation and that I really... I was like, yes, I can't wait because we're having a girl. I was like, yes, I can't wait to have a girl who's like that. You know, like it's not the meek mild playing in the background.
No, you won't have that. I can't see the both of you having a meek mild wallpaper flower type child. So
is she sort of turning out how you imagined?
It's funny. She's kind of in a way yes, and in a way they kind of they hold a mirror to you so much in all your life, you know, think expectations you have and their own journey, they become their own person. Yeah. So.
Are you quite, because some parents are, like, it's sort of almost, they let their kids have a lot of independence to grow like that.
I'm in a bit of conflict with all that, because I was brought up, my family's from the Caribbean. Now, you can use your imaginations. They were quite strict. It's like certain things I'm like, I couldn't speak. I tell her sometimes, I wouldn't speak to my parents the way you speak to me. And she's like, well, I'm not you. Da-da-da-da-da. They have so much freedom now anyway. So I have this kind of conflict where I try and let her go. And I also try and uphold some of the values I learn. So it's like.
Which is interesting, you know, we've been talking a little bit about that parenting stuff, haven't we, from the book that you were reading.
Yes.
And just about this idea about peer-led, the way kids are led by their peers more today, and the way that it's important to have a parent who leads them and guides them.
Yes.
And they become more independent in that way and more self-assured.
Yeah.
Rather than looking to the sides for their guidance.
So it's about how kids nowadays are spending more and more time not with parents, but with people their own age, be it from nursery onward.
Yeah.
Like, so actually, that old sort of parental guidance is much smaller than it used to be.
Yeah.
So this book argues actually that we need to almost go back slightly to a time when your parents should always be your guiding sort of
star. I think so, because you can't, you obviously you want them to be nurtured by their peers, but you also want to nurture them yourself. You might have a particular style of parenting that you have. And you might want to guide them that way. So it's a bit of both.
And do you think that you and Ben, your husband, have similar ideas on that? Or is that
it's funny because he's from Essex.
Yeah.
But we have similar kind of ideas. We always kind of taught. Maybe it's a generational thing as well. Like always taught, you must share everything. You must be kind. And I spent a lot of time going, no, share. And actually sometimes I thought, I should have taught you to be a bit more selfish sometimes. Because that's valuable as well. And that's important as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think sometimes in parenting, they've gone the extreme of the other side, where some kids are kind of very much, I am the only one, it's about me.
Yeah
the selfie and I think thing.
I think more than ever in this society we're living in now, we need to kind of think about the collective, as well as yourself, but we need to kind of take some of the older values.
Well, that's like, there's that danger of, and that I think we talked about it before, that selfie book talks about, that sort of extreme other end of modern parenting where you constantly, basically, it's almost constant affirmation telling the kid they're perfect.
Yeah.
And they grow up without the understanding of failure or being wrong. Do you know what I mean?
Do you remember Pass the Parcel? You used to get Pass the Parcel. There was only one present.
Yeah, exactly.
You just deal with it. Now it's like presents and everything. One wrapper is a present.
Yeah.
One wrapper is a present.
I think my mum used to get a present at every layer. Oh, like your a mom's tiny little one.
I can see your parents doing that. Your parents are very
so that everyone
kind
got a little present.
Nice.
Yeah.
My parents, it would have just been empty. Even if you won it, you'd open it and it'd be, this is to teach you disappointment. Life is pain.
You didn't have parties.
No, we never. Exactly. We wouldn't even have pass the parcel. I'd be in my room passing the air to myself.
This is all things to come, because obviously we're in pregnancy right now.
Yeah.
The kind of, you know, the way we're talking about the world changing and what we want it to be. It's interesting that, you know, there's still very traditional modes of looking at pregnancy and child birth and rearing and things like that. I was messaging with a friend of mine in Adelaide the other day, and we were talking about the app, you know, saying that how sometimes we talk about the size of fruit of the baby, which is Carl right now. Do you remember what she is?
Oh, hang on. So it was corn last week, wasn't it?
It was a sweet corn
last
week.
What's up from corn? Is it a... not a butternut squash this week.
No, you're desperate for that. You're desperate for that.
When is it going to be a squash?
Butternut squash.
Is it a pak choy? No, smaller.
No, it's been, that's in the past.
Oh, my word.
This is lots of little...
plantain.
Lots of little little fruits or vegetables in one big cluster.
Bunch of grapes.
Yeah.
Is it a bunch of grapes?
Yeah. She's a big bunch of grapes at the moment.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, but my friend Bart told me about an app that he's got called the Daddy Up app. And he's like, you should just look at it because it's crazily gendered. And he sent me a picture of week 20. The comparison size was a bald eagle's talon.
Come on.
So you think of a big old claw. And it talks about the baby as a cub. It says the cub progress. And then it, you know, something about, like, although your cub is growing, there is still plenty of unoccupied biological real estate to continue practicing lumberjack moves.
Ugh, come on. That's ridiculous. That's just guys who sit in an office and sort of resent the fact they're not cavemen anymore, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's that thing they feel like something's missing from their life. They've got to pretend they're a bear or something.
Yeah. I guess it's that opposite, I suppose, of like really like the kind of mommies and little babies and they're so cute to go, you got a cub and he's got real estate and he's a lumberjack.
But they're the sort of people that would have a gender reveal party and punch the wall when it was a boy. Do you know what I mean?
Have you watched any of those, Sarah? Have you ever?
Yeah, I've seen some of these. Things.
The videos.
They're gross.
It's a balloon and literally a pop balloon.
Goes blue and they just run off like, like just start celebrating. It's like, calm down, mate.
I love seeing the little siblings, if they've got siblings going, oh no, the whole world is going. They're the best ones.
Yeah, that's funny.
Take it back. I know money. I know. It's usually Americans. But yeah. They're quite funny. I love those ones.
That's good. I haven't zoomed in on that. Watch those ones.
Get a good old laugh.
I'm too busy judging the dads to scan down to the kids.
That's funny. And so with where I'm at in pregnancy, I'm having regular checkups at the premature clinic at the moment because my cervix had shortened and they just I'm on progesterone because they want it to be back to a normal length.
Yeah.
So I was in last week and it was the first time that I've seen kind of regular people there. And the woman I saw last week wasn't one of the regular doctors that I'd seen. And she was a little bit more, she was a little bit less confident than the other doctors that I've seen. So when she was doing the internal examination, it took her quite a while to sort of find like she had the right angle to look at the cervix and then kind of took it back out and was like, oh, there's too much gel. I've got to put more gel on. And then doing it again. And then... you know, that kind of feeling of caution that I just got from her suddenly goes into my body, you know, and I'm like, ooh, what is this? This doesn't seem as easy going as the other few weeks. And also when I got there, she's like, okay, have you emptied your bladder, which you have to do beforehand? Yeah. I was like, yeah, I have, but, you know, I could probably go again.
Yeah.
And because definitely over the last week I've needed to do more wees. And she was like, oh, do you want to take a little sample and we can do a sample just to check there's nothing wrong? And I was like, so I went and I did a urine sample, which was hardly anything because I, you know, there was hardly any wee there. But I was like, I've probably got some there. And when I gave it back to them, then they came back and said there was a trace of something, leukocyte or something, which means I could have a UTI and they wanted to send that off. But because there wasn't much wee in it, that could be like nothing. But it was just these little things of an extra caution. Or a doubt from that sort of side of the medical system that I haven't seen that much, and how that affects how I feel that it's all going is really interesting. Did you like how was your kind of pregnancy and hospital things like that? Do you remember any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I do. I remember my pregnancy being fairly. It was okay actually. I didn't really have morning sickness. I was working as well at the time, but I'd have this feeling this feeling of caution, like or worry, when there was nothing to worry about. And then when you get like one time, I couldn't feel anything.
Yeah.
So I rushed and I was like, I went to the doctor and said, I can't. And he's like, right, you need to go to the hospital. So I went to the hospital just to have it checked. You know.
Yeah.
And you just have this constant because we forget sometimes. It's quite an amazing thing.
Yeah.
To be carrying this thing inside you, you know, and so you do have that. And you just feel like this kind of thing, that this sponge, or you soak up other people's worries, like when you're in that room and in that space.
Yeah.
You pick up on.
And I think, I mean, I'm getting scans, like since the 20-week scan, we've got a 24-week one booked in next week because she was massive and they just want to check on how massive she is now or not. So I'm having scans every 4 weeks. And so I've definitely have had more kind of interaction, I think, with her than lots of people do. I can imagine I'd be doing that because I can't feel it. What's going on? Because you do lose that connection sometimes where you're like, why aren't I feeling anything?
Yeah.
But it's fine.
It's fine. Right? Yeah. Are you keeping the pictures? Do you get the little pictures?
Yeah, we've got a couple of pictures.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other I started doing some pelvic floor exercises this week as well.
Do the pelvic floor exercises.
Did you do them?
Do them.
Did you?
Is that a do them? Because I did them.
You couldn't decipher whether I did or didn't from that. No, I did do them.
Yeah.
I did like pregnancy yoga, yeah, which was really good. And she kept saying it. I was like, yeah, you know, everybody's nodding. But I can't stress it as much. I mean, I went to a kid's party. And you do go on the trampoline. I had to go to the toilet so many times.
Yeah.
I
get off and... Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's really important to do that.
I remember first learning about pelvic floor exercises maybe when I was about 15. In a biology class, we had this teacher, Miss Morette, and somehow she told us about it then. I don't feel like it was part of the curriculum.
That's great.
She was like, do them. So on and off, I've given it a go, but never, you know.
We could be doing it now while we're sitting here.
Could be. I really tense though. I could do little ones, but I'm doing these hold for 10-second ones at the moment.
Was it last night? I sort of busted you doing it. We were sort of talking and we got into bed. And I just got this weird sense that she was concentrating on something. I could feel her demeanour change. And I just went, you're right. And she went, I'm doing pelvic floor exercises.
It was.
Staring in the distance.
Yeah. Well, yeah, just suddenly a very serious tone came over her.
It was. That's what I'm doing it when I go to bed. Yeah. I go to do these hold it for 10 seconds. It's a really long time to hold, but
I
read. Because usually I used to do the like clench, let go, clench, let go, clench, let go.
Yeah.
They're the ones Miss Morette taught us.
Yeah.
But I just thought I'd up it a level.
Yeah.
But yeah, it makes me very serious. And it's something like if I had tried to do that now, I'd have to go into silence for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Like you like when you see babies doing a poo, I think.
Yes. Oh, I love when they do that. I love that.
Yeah, when their face changes,
and
they're really concentrating.
Yeah,
that's what I'm like when I do pelvic floor exercises.
Yeah,
that was what my mum said the other day, that apparently newborns go through 10 to 12 nappies a day. What do you think?
It's quite a lot.
Yeah,
yeah, like you know, cleaning one, put one on, they do it again, clean it.
Yeah. Did you use disposables or reusables?
I was a bit naughty. I used disposable.
We were thinking all that hippie thing of like, no man, we'll just wash them, and then we just heard a few horror stories.
Yeah.
And there's now ones that are like compostable and things
like that. Yeah, that's the ones I use, compostable organic ones. Yeah. I mean they've got really clever though. I don't know how our parents did all the washing terry toweling, whatever.
Sounds horrendous.
More than one. I don't know how they did that.
And when you didn't, like, before washing machines as well. Just
exactly.
Shit.
Everywhere.
Shitty towels.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What did she say? Oh, we were talking last night about, Mum said as well, she's like, oh, apparently, you know, you're supposed to ask babies when you want to change their nappies now, to get their permission to change their nappies.
Right.
And Carl was...
I said, I've already asked and apparently I'm not allowed to do it.
Love that. Get yourself out of that one. Yeah.
I've been told that she's not consented to me changing her nappy. Yeah. She really likes when mummy does it.
I think it will take your relationship to a whole nother level once you do that.
It's weird. I'm really squeamish like bodily functions.
Yeah.
But... I'm aware that is something I'm going to have to just get over.
You will get over it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, everyone I know, no one I know likes touching poo.
No.
But you just have to
No one I know either. Maybe there will be some people out there.
Of course. There definitely are people that like it. But I mean, none of my friends have openly admitted it.
Yeah, if you do like touching poo, get in touch at Cheggers Pod.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
On Instagram or Twitter.
We're not kink shaming.
No, we're not.
Yeah.
No. Because. I don't know. I don't know about your relationship with your husband that much, but I feel like you're pretty, you're not too fiery or like you get on pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
When the baby came, did that change a little bit? Like,
I think, because it all happened pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so I guess, I think sometimes it's good. I've heard people have conversations about planning together discussing what ideas you have for parenting.
Yeah,
we didn't really do that. We just had the idea that we would both be equal and get involved. So those sort of things are really important. I mean, I think a lot of the time after I was full of energy before the baby, and then afterwards I got really tired.
Yeah,
and then I had this funny thing where I think I was suffering with postnatal depression, but I didn't really know about it because I just keep busy.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, this is the thing where you have to take, when you take the child outside into the world with the cars and everything, you have to take that step forward, you know, because it's quite, because you get in your
out
own
of your
little,
house.
Yeah. So I was always taking her out and going, just keep doing things so you don't stop and be still, really.
Yeah.
I didn't do a lot of that. And it wasn't, I didn't realise till very later on that I had it.
Yeah.
Because
that's probably good then that you stayed. Because one of the things I've read about was it, the dangers of, if you're somebody who falls into postnatal depression,
yeah,
isolating yourself and actually not going out actually can elevate it to a much worse degree.
Yeah, so I think so. But yeah, I do. But I also think, because I got a lot of people to come and visit me and come see the baby. And I actually think, like, actually part of it was I also needed to just have some time with the baby and be still in the house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
And do you have a like a rational connection to why you're feeling like that?
I think I was just exhausted. I think I'd been doing a play and then I did some workshop things before she was born.
How many weeks or months up were you?
Gosh, right up to, let me think. I think it was like maybe 2 months before she came. And then when she did come, I think I had an idea of what the birth would be like, but it was over a number of days. And then I had to have an emergency cesarean because she'd had a poo and turned and it got complicated. I dilated to 8 centimetres. Mm-hmm. But just didn't continue on. So they had an emergency. And I think all those sort of things, and you're trying to get better and trying to rest. I think a lot of the aftercare is really important. And I was in this hospital for a couple of days, but they were lovely in the hospital. But it was hard when you've had a surgery and you're trying to get a baby up. And then there's a difference between the day nurses and the night midwives. You know, there's all that sort of stuff going on. Some are not so nice, some are nice. And other people had complications, so you're surrounded by other people. And I think I just wasn't still enough. I just didn't have a lot of quiet.
Yeah.
So I think in that sense. And then I continued. I did a bit of filming when she was 4 months.
Yeah.
And I probably should have just taken a proper break.
Yeah.
So there's all those things mixing in. You think, I have to, you know, there's all these things. You want to juggle it all. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think all that was in the mix of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's interesting, like you just saying surgery then with cesarean, because women don't necessarily say that. We don't talk about it as surgery. Like you just say, I had a cesarean.
Yeah.
But it is surgery, and then have to have, to recuperate from that, which sort of doesn't get labelled in that way. Like it's something that women just have. It's a cesarean, but it's a surgery that you have during birth. That, again, if men were doing that, would be...
Yeah, and I mean, I knew
some... Oh, yeah, we talk about hernias as if we've gone through 10 years of chemotherapy or something, the way we act.
It's an interesting thing how women don't really talk about it.
Yeah.
Because you do recover pretty quickly. It's quite amazing how quickly you can recover. But I didn't know anyone in my family that had one. And I had a friend who had one, but we didn't really talk about it. Or she didn't really... I think she was going through her own... healing process. She didn't really talk about it, so we didn't really talk about it that much.
Yeah,
you know, as much as, and then I suppose when you're trying to heal, afterwards, in hindsight, you might want to talk about things. Oh, how did you,
how did you get through this bit? And what was that like for you?
Yeah.
So do you think? And this is me putting a sort of psychology spin on it. Do you think there's a fear to talk about it in a negative way? You don't want to think about what was ultimately a magical positive thing.
I think there is.
In any sort of, you don't even want to say out loud a negative thought.
No,
about
I think it is. I think there is. I think there is a fear of talking about anything negative, and I think it's important. I remember going to one of these, I was in my area and I was going to one of these baby mum group things. I had to call my friends, like, let's go out for coffee because they're getting on my nerves.
Was that NCT?
No, I didn't do NCT. Maybe I should have done NCT. I didn't do it. Are you doing NCT?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's supposed to be quite good.
Yeah.
I didn't do that, but I did the cheaper one.
Yeah.
Probably, you pay in, you get something back. So I was just meeting these mums and they were all talking about, having babies in the pool. Some people were a bit anxious about their babies. Some had babies and they were just talking. I thought, these guys, look, I've got a baby here. She's really healthy. And I had an emergency cesarean, so I brought it up. Someone was like, I'm really worried. Does anybody know? And I explained to her, it's not as bad as, it's not a horror story as such.
Yeah.
And you do recover from it. And it's important to understand that.
It's something, because Carl and I were both born by cesarean.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And so because my mum, I was cesarean and my brother was cesarean as well. And until pregnancy, really, I always assumed without thinking about it, that I would have a child by cesarean.
Yeah.
Like that was just like, oh, well, that's the way it happens.
Yeah.
But now I'm in it. And again, I mean, obviously you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And if that's what happens, fine. You know,
yeah.
But I'm really, I'm really excited about the idea of giving birth.
Yeah.
Something I want to experience and see what it's all about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I guess, I mean, you go through a bunch of it already with labor, don't you? Like,
yeah.
You get a sense of what birth's all about.
Trolled from Great Big Owl. Tracy Ann Oberman interviews celebrities about their experiences of abuse online.
If you want to sit in a room and talk to another fellow sitting in his room and have an argument, that's fine too. Or you can not do that.
On trains.
I had to get on the train and this woman hit me in the back and said, "You're an arsehole."
And on a bus.
And I think it's weird that you would suggest that a woman is so ugly to get sex when you basically look like a potato.
All that and more. That's Trolled with Tracy Ann Oberman from Great Big Owl, out now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So I've been reading, I've got further into my book, which is the Ina May Gaskill book.
Oh, yeah, I love
which
her
I think
book.
Because there's two of them. There's one that's about... There's one, spiritual midwifery.
Yeah, I've got that one.
Yeah, and this is the second one, which is birth stories. So the first kind of third of the book is a whole load of birth stories and different women telling their own stories. And then it's got into more of the, the medical side of it or the midwife side of it. And so one thing I've learned about this week is sphincter law. Yeah.
Is this, you showed me a photograph.
Oh, yeah, that was just...
From the book on the train earlier on, which I'm still having PTSD flashbacks from.
That was about how you can have experienced joy and ecstasy during birth.
A poo sometimes, you can have a bit of joy in
But no, there was. The picture was very graphic. It was of a woman giving birth. But she did have a big old grin on her face.
Yeah.
So I will say, there was clearly she was enjoying herself.
Yeah. So there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot in there about... about ecstasy and how some women orgasm when they give birth and that it can be all these sorts of different experiences. And so much of what we know about birth is from what we see on TV and what we're shown. But the sphincter law that she talks about is just the idea that the way that your sphincters or your bum and your fanny and all your muscles, can the way they can just tense up if they're uncomfortable in a situation.
Yeah,
so that thing of like dilating only to 8 centimetres is the kind of thing that she talks about. If someone had come into the room that suddenly you weren't comfortable with.
Yes.
Or she says particularly men, if it's not someone connected to you in the family and a male comes into the room, that there's something that your brain goes, it's okay, but your cervix goes, that's a predator, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
Why is that person here? Or just other women that you feel uncomfortable with.
Yeah. There was a particular doctor she came through the door and I just had a feeling she wants to get this over and done with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I felt that she was a woman that decided, she was a doctor who decided, right, she said, you've dilated to 8, and it's a generous 8 is what her words were.
Yeah.
So you need to go in for surgery. That was the end of it.
Yeah.
But I think as long as you take as much control you can of your pregnancy and the process when you go into labour is a good thing. I entered into it where I thought, well, I was having these pains. I wasn't sure. I went in and they were running me a bath and I went and had a bath. And then I think what happened is I put a lot of power into their hands.
Yeah.
I was like, well, this is what I think it's labour pains. And I went into and then I ended up being horizontal for some time.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's a good idea. Most of them tell you not. Once
you
go
into
that, place.
They're just saying how important it is to keep walking around, like keeping active, particularly in that early stage, because it helps with movement and helps the baby moving into position and helps you as well, rather than just kind of lying and waiting.
Yeah.
So that's a thing. Yeah, it is this interesting thing as well about putting the power in their hands, which I definitely feel when I'm in there. I mean, who knows how I'm going to be on the actual day and the way it's going to go. And a book that I read ages ago about this, birth is a feminist issue, and that thing of how we don't take that into the birth room that much.
No, we don't.
And use our voice and say what we want. I think it's because we're worried that it's not going to go right. And if you say no to something and then you kill your baby or you it's your fault.
Yeah.
That you've not accepted intervention or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's on your back. Yeah. But again, in this book, it's very much like this is such a natural thing, and our bodies are designed to do this, and there are only very few people who have small pelvises, and there are only, like, the complications do happen, and then you can deal with them, but much more of the case is that we can do it.
Yeah.
Well, I remember Bryony said it when we were talking, when Bryony came on, she was saying, like, that thing of ultimately you can't help but trust them. They're doctors and they are experts, but also your body is a bigger expert. Exactly. She said if you're in a coma, your body would just give birth. Regardless, you know what I mean? It knows what it's doing.
Yeah.
So sometimes I do think there is that, you know, I'm a bit of a hippie, so I'm always like, you know, doctors know what they're talking about, but so do we.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do think you've got to listen to your body a lot more. I mean, people are taking all kinds of things, where they've decided to leave the hospital, go home, and, you know, they're taking it into their own hands, so to speak.
There's one thing that I keep thinking when I'm reading it about sort of breath and that connection, that I feel confident reading it as an actor going, oh, yeah, I know how to breathe deep and kind of...
Yeah.
Did you feel any of that, or did you connect any of that work?
Definitely. I mean, I felt... you know, as you get further on in the pregnancy, you get that shortness of breath.
Yeah.
And I used to do a lot of singing, so the voice started to change a lot and trying to gather that breath. But, in the early stages of labour, I do remember the breath, remember the breathing. And, I mean, we naturally as humans don't breathe in the right way anyway. So and it's great that you're an actor, so you know a lot more about breath.
Yeah.
But it's really important that can really help. Because I was in a lot of pain. I mean, I wasn't taking any painkillers for a long time. You know, they offered it to me. And I had that. I then started to use that, the electromagnet thing. You just plug it in and you attach it onto yourself.
Yeah.
And it gives off a current, like an electric current.
We've not heard about that.
It's a natural, I can't remember
what it's called. Is it a pain relief thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Just gives off a little, maybe to distract. And, I can't remember what it's called. But yeah, I used that, I hired one and then I used it later on as it got worse, but.
So you should write that down. That's a good little...
It's another thing that Carl wants to try, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to whack it on my head. Just test it out.
Yeah, it gives off some kind of electro waves. I can't remember.
That's cool. Yeah. And another thing in this book was, I can't remember if it's a chapter or part of a chapter, but it's about laughing in birth. And it talks about singing.
Sounds
great. But saying how good laughter is, so... Carl, you're going to be...
Oh, look at that. What an opportunity.
I've got to write a new 20 minutes.
Yeah. Try some new stuff.
I'll do an Edinburgh preview as you go into labour.
Yeah.
To try out some new stuff.
Yeah. Just saying how good that is for relaxing your body.
Definitely.
Which, again, I don't think I've ever seen that in something, someone laughing in a birth room. And Ina, mate, she talked about... She gave an example of a joke she does, and I was like, oh, duh.
No. But I suppose that thing
that wouldn't make me laugh. But she's like, it's really great when I say that, and then they relax.
It's that tone thing. Like it seems to come up almost every episode that we've chatted to everyone about their birth story. What I've really picked up on is hearing everyone has said that it's almost like a sort of on a knife edge of all it takes is a doctor to have a tone that's a bit off.
Yeah.
In that moment, and you suddenly get stressed and anxious and that. Whereas actually, everyone who's had like sort of nicer stories has said it's just had a nicer tone. The doctors have been nice and warm and open. And it's amazing how, like, you know, it's almost like, I know NHS is under a lot of stress and that, but like if in some of their training they were taught some sort of like voice and tone training or something, it might just help with that.
Yeah,
that's that bedside manner thing, isn't it? It's an old thing, but I understand that when you're under pressure, that's the first thing that goes out the window.
Yeah, and people's approaches are different, you know. So, that's another thing. I mean, I just remember the doctor. She came in the room. She she clocked me there and she just wasn't engaging really. So I, yeah. And I knew she was going to say that. It's just yeah. by her. I just look and not really looking at you as such.
Yeah. But so, again, I'm going to talk about this book a lot because I'm actually reading it. Rather than it just sitting beside my bed and me being like, oh, God, I haven't read it. But talking about how in the older days, before medicine really developed, that they had a much better, doctors had a much better understanding of that as well, of what was useful for them to be in the room and for intervention, that because of the way that the care has developed so much, that people can be a bit quick off the mark to intervene and to try and help to prevent something because they are aware of all the possible things that could go wrong as well. And one of the birth stories was from two obstetricians who went to the farm, to this like home birth centre to have their child.
Yeah.
And how they knew they were challenged to try and turn off that bit of their brain that was trying to to doctor themselves and trust the process of birth, which they knew would be okay in this situation. And it was. She had a natural birth, but she's, yeah, this thing of being, the training of being the doctor.
Yeah.
All the things that you get taught that can go wrong and how that can get in your way.
Yeah. Cause I remember bringing in my birth plan. So I wanted to have a natural birth. And I said, maybe if the pool was available, I would have it in the pool. And I remember one of the doctors, like, I offered it to someone, we would discuss it. Another doctor was like, well, you know, it might not go that way. It's like, I thought that's really interesting. That was your immediate thing to say to me. Somebody else who was not even involved with what the discussion was about, but just hearing it, and just, it might not go that way.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, there's a lot of things that might not go the way you expect it to, but you offer up that plan and you have a backup plan in case, and they would always try and, everybody's wants the healthy baby at the end of the day. So, but it's just interesting. It's an immediate feeling of we have to, I don't know, box it in or just keep it, measures, safety measures and, you know.
Yeah.
Like you said.
In the end, it's all, everyone wants the same outcome, which is a healthy, healthy baby to be born.
Yeah.
But I'm finding, reading this book, and it's interesting that you've read her other one. And then when you don't necessarily get to experience it as the way that she talks about it. And I'm very aware that might be the case, but I'm also an optimist.
Yeah, why not? Why shouldn't? Yeah, exactly. Should be. And then I think a lot of things you can learn from that as well. It is about taking a bit more control.
Yeah.
And she offers, I think in those books, she offers up that for you. So I think that helped me a lot. If I had not read that and I had that situation, when I had emergency cesarean, I think I would have been in a different place than if I'd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you did pregnancy yoga.
Yeah.
Did you go, you'd went to classes or you didn't?
I went to classes, yeah. A friend of mine gave me this old video, probably from the 70s or 60s.
Yes. A VHS?
Yes. No, it was a, they probably have a VHS version, but it was on the DVD.
Yeah.
And it was, it was like, they all do the stretches and they're all doing the pelvic floor and, but they're all in these like unitard type things.
Yes.
It's like, brilliant. But I did a lot of yoga. I found that really, it's like a nice offering for myself as well.
Yeah. You know. And how when did you start doing it?
I started it when I was about 4 months.
Okay.
And carried on, yeah.
I'm a bit, like, I'm doing it at home sometimes, but I haven't got to a class yet.
Go to a class. Sorry, my stomach's going. Go to a class, nice little, I went to, hello.
I think mine went as well. Did it? Responded.
Responding. It's we have nothing in our stomachs.
You're connecting to the baby.
Some could be a bit competitive, can't they? What's up with everything, isn't it? I remember going to one with class, I was like, wow, I'm not stretching out like that.
And did you do other exercise? Or?
No, I just did. I'm walking.
Yeah. I'm walking.
And the little ball, the bouncy ball.
Oh, yeah, I haven't got one of them yet.
Yeah.
What's that particularly good for?
I think it's good to just keep your hip. It helps with your hips, keeping you open.
Yeah,
it just helps you to relax and
I said about getting one the other day just to stretch my back out. To kind of go backwards over it. I had a thing yesterday when I went to see two shows, and definitely by the end of the day, my coccyx felt a bit. I was like, it's a bit hard sitting down for this long.
Yeah, you need a little cushion, special cushion.
Yes, should be interesting for the aeroplane going to Australia.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But you get your pillows on things.
Yeah, get my pillows on. And for your pregnancy, like, is there things, if you look back on it, is there things that you wish you'd known or done differently or?
I think I just wished I'd had a bit more, I gave myself a bit more time.
Yeah.
Because there was, there's this impression, and it still continues even whether you have children or not, this impression as a woman that if you can do all these things, you're amazing, you're a superwoman. But actually, just be at peace with what you can do and just take it easy. Some, you know, this idea of like, especially when a pregnant woman, you see them like Amazon woman, you know, you see them all just going, yeah. You know, like they're taking on the world. And it's like, you don't need to prove anything. I think a lot of it sometimes is proving something.
Yeah.
And we've got that idea sometimes. And just it's about taking some time as well, enjoying things and being bit more still.
Yeah, I definitely in my early pregnancy I had that stillness, and I was aware of that idea of creating space. I definitely created space that I think helped the baby happen.
Yeah,
like literally going, I'm not going to do much because I've got to. If I'm going to have a baby, how am I going to fit that into my life?
Yeah.
But I have been busy lately, and I've even been busy this week, even though it's just been seeing shows and catching up with people. And then we've got next week, and then we fly to Australia. And today I was like, I've just got to – actually, next week I've got to take it a bit easy and have a bit of a bit of downtime. And then I've got another week of downtime, and then I go into working the festival, which is
full on for three and a half, four weeks.
And then I get downtime again.
Yeah. And when we come back from Australia, it's 6 weeks of nothing. Up to the birth, it's proper.
Nesting.
Cleaning,
getting that bag,
moving things around.
Yeah, exciting.
Yeah, getting and having a party.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah. is there anything, Carl, that you had?
Probably the same as always. I always ask guests just about: is there any advice you'd give to the partner of somebody who's pregnant? Just things that they could probably think about, bear in mind, or looking back to something you could maybe say to your partner that, like, they maybe forgot to do or something they did that was really good.
You'd recommend a push present. sorry.
A push present?
Do you have heard about this?
No.
No.
I don't know, I find it hilarious. There's an American thing, and I sent it to my husband as a joke. It was like this American thing talking about you get your lady a push present for having a successful. Some women got rings and stuff.
So, basically just for the actual going through the process
having
of birth.
A baby.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. I thought it was ridiculous. But my husband was like,
feels quite rude towards the baby. Yeah. So they show up and you're like, that's not enough. Yeah. Here's a, you know, a
I thought
that
was kind
car.
Of, yeah, so I had this real desire for pate. Don't ask me why. I don't really eat it. It's most of a horrible experience as a child, but there you go.
Would it be an iron or something? It's full of it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's maybe what I, yeah. So I said, that's what I want for my push. But I wouldn't advise anyone to get anybody a push present unless they desperately want it.
How much pate did you get?
Yeah, but by the time I got it, and then I had some, I was like, I don't want this.
It's a bit placental as well.
Why didn't I ask for a ring? Yeah. Why didn't I ask for something really expensive?
Yeah. It's like a cheap date like me.
No, but what advice I'd give you? Just communicate and offer up and have time and don't feel like, you know, it's an equal thing, isn't it?
Well, I mean, in sort of terms of emotionally, I'm trying to be as equal, but I'm also very respectful of the fact that physically I'm still quite, you know, I'm observing it rather than, you know, I could never understand what it's like to go through it apart from just hearing Hannah talk about it.
Yeah.
That was the other thing. We started watching the new Netflix TV show, Babies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. How's that?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. The first episode is about love, and it looked at people's brains and how in women, mothers, there's the amygdala, which like goes red and is just on all the time. Once you've had the baby, like you are on and you're ready to like respond to any noise, to anything for the rest of their life. Like that gets turned on and that's that. Fathers, it gets turned on, but... You know, the volume is down.
Yeah. Unless
they're the primary caregivers.
Yeah.
So people who have, like, gay couples who have a baby, their amygdalas go on to bright red. Like, it's almost the dad's responsibility or the partner's responsibility to see themselves as a primary caregiver, which alerts them to be that alert the whole time rather than kind of sitting back a bit. Yeah. One of the questions I was asking about you and Ben was because I've got some really good friends in Australia who have a really great relationship, and they told me when they had their first baby, that was the first time they'd really argued, and they had to create a safe word. That was their thing. Like they had a safe word, so someone was getting a bit. Don't talk to me anymore. Like we can't deal with this. Yeah. But that was something that really changed, and they managed to get through it like that. But they saw how that was. Yeah. The baby had changed.
Yeah, he can really change. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, me and Ben. And I kept thinking about a safe word. I didn't think we worked out a safe word. I couldn't decide on it probably.
Pate.
Yeah. So I remember. Yeah, it's like I don't have a little cupboard that I can just go into. You know, but yeah, you do get that. It's a lot of tension, and everybody's really tired. Yeah. It's really tired, and there isn't. Just have that little thing there, knowing that you just want to take care of it. And what if this happens? What if that happens? You know, all these little scenarios and trying to and negotiating. You know, you do something differently. I've seen couples like out and about. You know, and you just see it. Like, I'll just do it. You know, sort of thing. You've got to have that communication. Yeah.
You've got to say, I'll just do it.
I'll just do it.
Yeah.
All right, I'll do that.
Be your mantra.
Yeah.
That can be your push present. Okay, oh cool. Gosh. Well, thank you so much for coming today, Sarah.
Thank you.
It's really good to see you and you. To talk to you. Mm. And to our listeners, if you want to get in touch with us, we're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at CheggersPod. Or you can email us at CheggersPod@gmail.com. Nice. And you can go and review us on iTunes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Oh, download stuff. And you can give Sarah a review for this episode. No, that's a thing that you can do with podcasts. So do that if you'd like to. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week. Thanks.
Thank you.
Television history is contained in the Box of Delights.
I've climbed up Nelson's Column once before.
These are small.
And put it down in front of Bagpuss.
I'm Julia Rayside. Join me and my guests as we dip into our favourite TV memories.
Suppose Martin Hurley bashing her head like this.
You can't tell me what to do. You ain't my mother.
I love when a plan comes together.
Come and tell us what yours are too.
We've all been told we can't discuss nominations.
It's a bit of car air.
Shut up with a novel on the top.
I think I'm like you, Lovejoy.
Find us on Twitter @BoxDelightsPod and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Great Big Owl.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.